Welcome back. I'm Ian Masterson, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. And joining us now, Dr. Dawn Garzon Marks, a clinical professor at the Washington State University College of Nursing and president of the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners with more than 24 years' experience in primary care, behavioral and mental health, and urgent convenient care. Welcome to Background Briefing, Dr. Dawn Garzon Marks.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here.
Well, thank you. I wish it was under better circumstances, because what we're talking about amounts to a national policy of child abuse, and all of us are shamed by the actions of our government at the moment, both nationally and internationally. And your organization has written that traumatic life experience in childhood, especially those that involve loss of a caregiver or parent, cause lifelong risk for cardiovascular and mental health disease. So could you elaborate on this and tell us about the study that you've done?
Absolutely. So the work that this is based on is the Adverse Childhood Experiences research that was done in the late 1990s. And what we know scientifically and we have seen replicated in multiple studies is that children who experience very traumatic experiences can have what is called toxic stress. And children who experience toxic stress, it does increase lifelong risk of heart disease. It can increase cancer rates. It increases obesity rates. And it can certainly contribute to mental health issues. Curiously, we're also noticing in a number of studies, including some recent research that just came out this month, that some of those effects might actually affect future generations. And the thought is that these traumatic experiences turn on genes that are present, and that once those genes are turned on, that may be one of the reasons why we see this increased incidence in disease in the child's lifespan. But we now see that adults who've had traumatic experiences in childhood have children that have higher rates of certain chronic diseases. And so that might be that mechanism through which this, in a sense, trauma is passed down to future generations.
Well, I'm a grandparent of a 2.5-year-old, and her mother and my granddaughter were just staying with me for a few days ago. And the little one was asleep in her car seat, and the mother went out for a little bit, and I was babysitting, and she woke up, and there was no mother there. And even though she knows me, it was painful listening to her wail and trying to comfort her. And, of course, her mother showed up shortly thereafter. But it was a painful experience for me. I mean, and I'm her grandfather. So I can only imagine what it's like for a child to wake up and realize the only person you've known all your life is gone.
Well, and I think we have to, when we're specifically speaking about the immigrant children, there are a number of issues. So there are language issues. The culture may be different. Many of these children have literally walked thousands of miles escaping or fleeing from situations in their native countries that were considered to be bad enough by a parent that they thought, I'd rather take the risk walking across this desert than take the risk of having my child be here. So just that very migration can be very traumatic for the child. So then if they then show up and maybe their nutrition hasn't been optimal, they're dealing with seeing their parent being afraid or traumatized, and then they're placed in a situation surrounded by people that they don't know, removed from this caregiver that they rely on, with potential language barriers. And there have been rules that have been passed by well-meaning individuals who I'm sure made the decision to do so to protect children from bad advances on the part of bad adults, but unable to hug a child or let the child sit on their lap or have any sort of physical comfort, they're able to attempt to verbally help these children. But if that language barrier is there, those children don't even have that. So this is an unusual circumstance where there are all of these very traumatic things that come together. And I hear you. I've got two kids myself. And as a mom, you know, when my children were very upset, it was absolutely gut-wrenching. This traumatic stress is obviously a whole other level that goes beyond kind of the normal childhood anxieties and fears that come into place. And these children are particularly vulnerable. And so we have to be very careful on how we treat them, that we don't further traumatize them through the process.
And again, I'm speaking with Dr. Dawn Garzon-Marx, who is a clinical professor at the Washington State University College of Nursing, and she's the president of the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners with more than 24 years' experience in primary care, behavioral and mental health, and urgent convenient care. So there is an audio clip that has made its way out of one of these facilities where the children are being detained, and it's quite heartbreaking. The language is all in Spanish because these kids only speak Spanish. And there is a Border Patrol agent who speaks Spanish, essentially making fun of the plight of these children and more or less saying, which is a part of the kind of stuff that you hear on Fox News, that this is all a liberal plot, that they basically kids are being coached, their parents are coaching them to come here and lie their way into the United States. And, of course, the president himself just tweeted out today, Democrats are the problem. They don't care about crime, and they want illegal immigrants, no matter how bad they may be, to pour into and infest our country like MS-13. They can't win on their terrible policies, so they view them as potential voters. So, in other words, our president is saying that the Democrats want gang members to come in here, the worst people to come in here, so that they'll vote. It's pretty preposterous, and frankly, the rebuttals from the Democrats are pretty pathetic in the face of those kind of vicious insults. So it's a pretty dismal situation politically, but it seems like it's almost like a lot of people in the world of Fox News and on the far right and Trump's base in this country actually get a great deal of pleasure out of seeing the anguish expressed by people like you and me. Laura Ingraham was basically saying, oh, these kids are just at summer camp, you know, more or less saying that a bunch of these whining liberals are just completely phony, literally making fun of compassion in the face of this heartless treatment.
Well, I mean, I can't speak to what happens in the minds of politicians because, you know, I'm just a normal person and a nurse practitioner who happens to be a mom and is passionate about kids. I can tell you from my experience, I grew up in Miami in the 1970s and 80s and was there during the time that we had Cuban immigrants and Haitian immigrants arriving on the shores during the Mariel Boatless and during the Papa Doc Duvalier times. And so I have cared for and seen the condition of many of our immigrants who were literally in the middle of the night fleeing their homes and coming here. And I know that the conditions of the individuals that we've seen is that they need care and compassion when they arrive. You know, I think what we need to do as Americans who feel that this may not be representative of how we want to see children treated is this is our opportunity to have honest conversations with our representatives, with our policymakers, because they work for us, right? So they're there because we elected them, because we put them in office. And this is our time to say, with all of the scientific evidence that we have, we know that further traumatizing these children is basically putting them at risk for serious health outcomes in their lives, as well as potentially to any of their offspring. So I can't speak to why any talking head on one side of the aisle or another comes to the conclusions that they do. I can only just tell you that what we know from scientific evidence is that these are very dangerous conditions for these children to be in. And even our own government has standards of trauma-informed care and how we're supposed to care for children who've experienced trauma. And the cornerstone of that is to make sure that we don't further victimize them and further traumatize them while we're caring for them.
Well, let's play the clip that's been made available of these children in detention. It's all in Spanish, needless to say. And of course, Ann Coulter said that these kids were essentially, the crying kids are child actors. But I think you can tell from just the audio that these kids aren't acting. And one of the little kids is asking for her aunt. She's been told how to get in touch with her aunt. And the male voice, and again in Spanish, is a U.S. Border Patrol officer, is more or less saying, this is all orchestrated, you know. Kids are the orchestra, and so where's the conductor, is pretty much what he said. Let's just play that clip.
Bueno, aquí tenemos una orquesta.
And again, that is some audio from these young children in detention. I find it pretty heart-wrenching. What's your response to this? Dr. Dawn goes on, Marx.
So I can tell you that as a pediatric nurse practitioner, children suffering has been my life's passion. Preventing it, helping them recover from it, and that our organization, the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners, as well as the American Academy of Pediatrics, other nursing groups, have come out clearly with clear stated concerns about how we're further traumatizing these children. The lack of human response to any individual who's suffering, and this is me speaking, this isn't beyond, you know, this is me as an individual, not in speaking for anyone else, is very difficult for me to understand, because I personally believe that compassion is an important part of who we are as human beings. What we need to do as organizations is to then help inform the individuals about exactly what's going on and what we know are the results of these types of adverse experiences.
So in terms of influencing, of course, the president is meeting with the Congress this evening in Washington. There's a couple of bills up, and he's already said in advance of these meetings that he wants to make changes. So it's very difficult to know what is going to come from this. And the Senate's made it pretty clear that they're not particularly interested in voting on any of these House bills. So it seems as that at this point that what's going on politically is kind of a sideshow. It's sort of meaningless theater. So what would your advice be to members of the audience who are outraged by what's happening to the treatment of these children and want to get the attention of their lawmakers to deal with this man-made disaster?
Well, I think our role as individual citizens is always to pick up the phone, call our legislative offices, let them know that we're concerned about these issues. You know, time and time again, I've seen politicians be swayed by feedback from people who live in their districts. So certainly I would advocate that we pick up the phone and that we call and we share our perspectives with our legislators. I think as families and as community members, you know, there are organizations that are working with these children that we can help support. And then as parents and as people like yourself, who's a grandfather, when children ask about these questions, when they see things on TV and they have questions about what's happening, you know, remember that we're talking to children, that children are kids first. And so, you know, we want to, I don't know that talking about the politics and it is necessarily something that a young child should be exposed to, but certainly what most young children want to know is that they're safe and that they're heard and that there is someone who loves and cares them and protects them, and that it's a wonderful opportunity to have discussions with our children about what our own individual family values are around this topic, because children learn from our example. They learn more from what we do than from what we say. And so I think those of us who are concerned, it really falls on our shoulders to actively do something other than just getting into yet another rant with someone on social media and speaking up with the people that are in positions to change this and let them know that we don't find this practice to be acceptable. Or if we feel that it's a practice that should continue, that's something that should be discussed as well, too.
Well, it's apparently, though, not just the psychological mental state of these children being traumatized by being ripped from their parents' arms at the border. Physically, we don't know a lot about these shelters and the conditions. Only one former Walmart was made open to the press, and it was largely housing, well, entirely housing, young boys, I think, up to the age of 15 or 16. I think most of them were at least 10. We haven't seen, we only had the audio that I played a little while ago of one of the facilities holding the younger kids. But now they're talking about tent cities. And in the middle of Texas desert, it's got to be pretty horrible physically, doesn't it? I mean, are you concerned not just with the mental health, but also the physical health of these children?
So absolutely. It's over 100 degrees. It's in the desert. You know, are these children going to be kept from being overheated? Will they have sufficient amounts of fluid so that they're not dehydrated? These are very important questions, and again, get back to this issue, are we re-traumatizing the children even further? And the people who would say, you know, he's 16 years old, a 16-year-old is still a child. They're still growing. They're still developing. They're actually at a particularly vulnerable time period because their brain is remodeling itself and kind of rewiring itself to optimize the way that it functions. And so even 16-year-olds, we have to remember, are not adults. They're children. They still have fears. They still have concerns. They may not have that complex understanding that we have. And again, I would just ask if you would want to be in that sort of a situation. If you were tired, frightened, potentially dehydrated, exposed to illness during the time that you traveled these thousands of miles, would you want to be in a tent? And what types of care and services that you would feel that are needed? And these kids' physical needs have to be met. We cannot cause further trauma and fear by separating them from the adult that they confide in. And anyone who's ever been ill or in a stressful situation knows that their ability to process during that time is even more difficult. And absolutely, there are physical dangers that are inherent to housing someone outside in the heat in the desert.
Well, just in closing, Dr. Dawn Garzon-Marx, you mentioned earlier that the caregivers, and we're not even sure who they are and how qualified they are, that are taking care of these kids, they are forbidden from actually comforting the kids physically, even touching them. And there are obviously reasons for that. But we heard the clip of the Border Patrol person being rather callous, suggesting all these crying kids were being orchestrated. But the little kid that's asking for her to get in touch with her aunt, that person cannot be comforted when she finds out that nothing's being done physically. I mean, you can't hug her, in other words.
Well, and that's my understanding, is that, you know, because of fears of bad types of people coming in and abusing the children, that's very similar to what we teach our teachers or what we teach our healthcare providers, is that we have to be very careful about physical space with children and that we don't come into their physical space in a way that could be seen as being threatening or abusive in any way, shape, or form. It is my understanding from the reports that I have read that many individuals who are working with these children have in fact been informed that they can try to verbally console them, but that they shouldn't have direct physical contact. And I think the photo that you alluded to earlier was of the child who was standing and crying, and someone was talking to them, and again, not being present at the time and only seeing the picture, it would seem that that picture did support that practice of not physically interacting with the child.
Well, Dr. Dawn Gazan-Marx, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you for your time. I am very happy to be here.
And again, I've been speaking with Dr. Dawn Gazan-Marx, who is a clinical professor at the Washington State University College of Nursing and president of the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners with more than 24 years' experience in primary care, behavioral and mental health, and urgent convenient care. We're going to take a brief station break and back looking into the corrupt deal that Russia made in order to get the World Cup now underway in Russia and the role of Christopher Steele in bringing down the criminal reign of the FIFA boss Sepp Blatter.